playback on RT Radio 1. Sponsored by the all-new Irish Times Weekend. With new writers like Marion Keyes and Sean Moncrief, your weekend's in good hands.
There were plenty of unfolding surprises on RTE Audio Services this week, where the programme started in one direction and veered off somewhere else. I'll play you three of them later on. But one place sports fans are not hoping for a surprise this weekend is with the Irish soccer team in Gibraltar. Not after the upsets of last weekend. Now, it wasn't all bad. There was good news for a couple of parishes in Galway and Kilkenny, for a man from County Down, and for a woman from County Wicklow.
I feel great. That was a great performance, a solid performance against an undefeated fighter. So, yeah, great weekend for me.
Great weekend for Katie Taylor, who won her latest fight on Saturday morning.
An Irish player in for the side, so it's going to be...
But later on Saturday, there was the Irish rugby game against Wales.
Sweeps it away towards Alan Wynne.
Now, commentator Michael Corcoran and co-commentator Donal Lenehan were on 2FM at the match.
And get in for the try. What a sensational start.
Well, an incredible start for Wales. All choreographed.
And although both come from the long tradition of impartial RTE sports journalism, by the second half, in their voices, they were revealing their true feelings about the drubbing Ireland was getting.
And Conor Murray tried to gather that one. Referee's whistle has gone. And a penalty. The Irish player not rolling away.
It's a horror show. I mean, Ireland just can't get anything right.
25-7 to Wales. And the post-mortem went on for a couple of days.
Too many of our key players are just way off the form books.
Donal Lenehan on Game on 2FM.
And it's one thing to be playing badly, but it's another thing to let the opposition know that you're playing badly. I mean, I always remember, some of your older listeners will remember the great Noel Noisy Murphy from Munster and Ireland fame. When he coached us with Munster, with Ireland, with Cork Conn, he always had this saying, never let the opposition know you're bunched.
And that has to be the nickname of the week, Noel Noisy Murphy. Retired player Brendan Devaney was on the same programme.
They've been superhuman. I think what they're being now is a small bit human.
But Brendan wasn't talking about the Irish rugby team. He was talking about the Dublin football team, who also lost on Saturday to Tyrone.
I think that just because of the run that they've been in, where they've been out of the team, players chomping at the bit trying to get in, they've been blowing teams away. It just seems to stutter a small bit, and I would think that Gavin is definitely a bit worried.
Well, if Dublin manager Jim Gavin and Ireland rugby manager Joe Schmidt are looking for answers, they could listen into a retired rugby player with his own radio show.
We all want to discover our hidden talents and make an impact. Our guest, an ex-footballer...
This is Aidan McCullen, and his show on RTE Radio 1 Extra is The Innovation Show, which is on Saturday and Tuesday afternoons. Question.
I spent a lot of time working in football today, and I've seen plenty of examples of football players that were very gifted.
This week, he featured Rasmus Ankersen, who has studied high-performance athletes with a view to helping business people spot talent.
They need to change their mindset to get to the next level. They're just not able to do that because they've had so much success. They had so much money already that they're not prepared to pay the price for changing. I think you see that in many businesses as well. I mean, there's a good quote, with great success comes great fear of losing it.
So, how do the sports superhumans of Dublin and the Irish rugby team get back on form? On the 2FM post-match analysis after the rugby international, former player Paddy Wallace says the answer to the national problem is in the local game.
So Ireland need to go away and be successful with their provinces. Players need to build their confidence up, try and replicate the success that they've had with the provinces.
The power of the local is something Cora Finn and Ballyhale Shamrocks proved with vim this weekend. They competed on St. Patrick's Day in the GAA All-Ireland Club Championships.
After 8 minutes of stoppage time, and Ballyhale Shamrocks are the All-Ireland Club Hurling Champions for 2019. Henry Shefflin, who has done it all as a player, has made the transition to management seamlessly. The Shamrocks are smiling on St. Patrick's Day. They have beaten St. Thomas's by 2:28.
It is all over, and Cora Finn have been crowned AIB All-Ireland Club Football Champions on a final score. Cora Finn, 2 goals and 16 points. Dr. Crowe, 10 points.
Commentators Garú Jean Nic an Umra and Antona O'Connellan from Radio na Gaeltachta, and Pádraig Lodge and Brian Carthy from Radio 1. This music is from the Martin Hayes Quartet. It was heard on Radio 1's Imagining Ireland on Monday, a recording of a recent concert in London, which was part of a year-long programme of Irish arts and culture in Britain. One of those who took to the stage was writer Joe O'Connor.
When first I heard that Britain is leaving the EU, what came to mind were those impossibly sad and moving and prophetic words written by William Butler Yeats so long ago, and I quote them now. First, I was afraid. I was petrified. Kept thinking we could never live without you by our side. But then I spent so many nights thinking how you done us wrong. And I grew strong. I saw we'd have to get along. So now go. Walk out the door. Just turn around now. You're not in Europe anymore. I wish you well now you've decided to be free, to be ruled by Boris Johnson and his chums, the DUP.
Joe O'Connor also wrote about the impact of emigrating to England on relationships.
Certain friends I remember disappeared into London. They never came back, and some of us lost touch. I hope England was kind to them, as it was kind to me in those years.
I went over there to see what was going on because they just seemed to be standing about. And Wes had a bone in his hand.
One of those lost Irish in England was the subject of one of this week's documentaries.
We carried on looking around. We found other bones, the pelvis.
The documentary on One, The Ballad of Patrick Follin. The remains of a man were discovered in woods in Kent.
We saw these black boots. And
the documentary traced the police's attempt to identify them.
Mr. Pearson phoned into the investigation to talk about a person called Old Paddy. So I went and spoke to Mr. Pearson, and it was very clear that around 10 years prior to the discovery of these remains, there was a gentleman called Old Paddy who had gone missing from the West Kingsdown area.
Old Paddy turned out to be an Irishman named Patrick Follin, who had lived in the woods for 50 years. The next step for the documentary maker Ciarán Cassidy was to try and find someone back in Ireland who knew Patrick Follin. You can hear the full documentary on rte.ie/docon1 or on the Doc on One iPhone or Android app. Unusually, the Patrick Follin documentary used a songwriter to help tell the story. In this case, Mick Flannery.
They were clearing out the forest land, making way for development. I came across Old Paddy's bones. The place was dark and overgrown, where he had died 11 years before.
We're gathered here today to remember Patrick Follin, known as Paddy, to all his friends.
The drama on One this week also played with the form. It was a drama, but with documentary elements.
It was the time of the Troubles, and at the end of the uprising, when the Sinn Féinians came to our village. They were going to...
Sinn Féiners. IRA men. But not Sinn Féinians. Get it right, boyo.
It was entitled James's Story and included an interview with an Englishman who came to Kerry as a student in 1968 and heard an incredible story from a local man.
They called all the men and the boys that were over 14 years of age to a meeting in the village bar and told us that they expected us to show our loyalty to the nationalist cause.
Certain factions in the IRA in Kerry decided to take matters into their own hands, as they felt perhaps that the commanding officers in certain parts of the county were not active enough.
The Fenians put a revolver on the table and made us draw straws for it.
The shortest straw fell on me. I was just 14 years old and the youngest in the room. I was told to go out and shoot an Englishman.
Go out and shoot an Englishman.
Drama on one, James's story. It's a great story, well told, but as you listen, you realise there's something wrong with it. You can hear the full programme on the Drama on One page on rte.ie and decide for yourself on the truth and the history. Truth and History figured on the Ryan Tuberty Show on Thursday.
Pro-Brexit Tory Daniel Hannan. And he suggested that Fianna Fáil had won every Irish election between 1932 and 2008. And, of course, then Twitter goes bonkers, delighted with himself. One guy said, yes, you're right. Yeah. And also Michael Collins faked his own death in 1922 in what was then Ireland's largest insurance scam. And Collins would later flee to America and flew the Apollo 11 mission. He'd be immortalised in the song In the Air Tonight, written by his brother Phil. That's good. Hashtag Hannan Irish History.
Truth and History also features in the History Show special on St. Patrick's Night on Radio 1.
If there is one thing that is very, very clear, is the huge public support there is for history.
It was a debate on the value of all our current commemorations of events that took place 100 years ago.
The teaching of history, the teasing out of different narratives within history.
The speakers included President Michael D. Higgins, who said we have to be open to the fact that there are versions of history that we Irish may not be comfortable with. For example, with the Amritsar massacre in India in 1919.
People are mowed down who felt that they were at a religious festival. And you must remember, if you're being honest there, the general who is in charge of that is of Irish extraction. The governor is equally of Irish extraction.
John Borgonovo from UCC said there's plenty of cod historical analysis about, like, for example, why Munster was so prominent in the War of Independence.
Kind of like the Roy Keane theory of mad court people are so jealous of Dublin. They couldn't wait. Dublin stole the thunder in 1916 and we'll show the big smoke. And I don't think that really holds up.
One of the other speakers in the History Show debate was former TD Martin Manser. He's on the government's advisory group on the decade of centenaries. He said there's a value in these commemorations.
It's not about reigniting old passions, but understanding what has happened. I suppose a little bit of what Wordsworth said about emotion recollected in tranquility.
Ah yes, history and tranquility. The two didn't go together very well in the British Parliament this week.
This is my conclusion.
Speaker John Bercow reached back to 1604 to mess with Theresa May's head.
What the government cannot legitimately do is to resubmit to the House the same proposition, or substantially the same proposition, as that of last week, which was rejected by 149 votes.
You, the public, have had enough.
In a speech on Wednesday, blaming MPs and, it seems, referring to the 1604 law, she used a fine, odd word.
You're tired of the political games and the arcane procedural rows.
Arcane, which means mysterious or known only to a few. And if you like odd words, Brexit is still the gift that keeps on giving.
A question and answer session afterwards. With
this is Lisa O'Carroll, Brexit correspondent of The Guardian on Drive Time.
There were suggestions by Jacob Rees-Mogg that they could prorogue Parliament, that is to close Parliament and then open it again with the Queen's speech.
And then Sean O'Rourke with this one.
What do you make of his démarche yesterday?
Démarche apparently means political initiative.
And we are assured and we feel assured that any of the additional assurances...
The Brexit dog was a suggestion that came into playback at rte.ie to hear again. Turns out it's not a new political term, but an actual dog that popped up during Mary Lou MacDonald's interview with Sean O'Rourke.
...that if the backstop requires Northern Ireland to adopt new EU regulations, the rest of the UK will follow suit. Would you have a problem with that?
Sorry, Sean, my dog is... I do apologise. My dog is barking in the background. Can you repeat that question?
I can, and it's great to have a bit of normality injected into the proceedings as well.
All bets are off. Who knows what's going to happen? It's all over the news. She's gone back to the EU to ask for...
Owen McDermott's show on 2FM turned the whole Brexit thing into a poetry competition.
First line for Poet Noodle today. Brexit's a bit of a sham. That's the first line. Brexit's a bit of a sham.
Cheryl from Navan sent in this entry by WhatsApp.
Brexit is a sham. The word makes me want to ram my head against the wall. What's going on at all? In the news more than war. Lads, leave and shut the door. Let's never speak of Brexit no more. It's a topic that will bore. Accept your vote. Put on your coat. Good luck.
Ha ha! Good luck!
Owen McDermott's show on 2FM on Brexit. And the chance also for them to play some nice classical music too. RTE Junior, the children's channel, also plays classical music in a show called Classical Kids, presented by Ian McGlynn. But on Sunday, he played something you might hear on 2FM when he was talking about Japanese composer Koji Kondo. You may not recognise the name, but his music is famous for being in the video game
Super Mario Brothers. Let's take a listen to the music that he wrote for the Super Mario Brothers game, and then we'll hear the same tune, but played by a whole orchestra.
And then there was...
The Angry Birds. The music here is by a composer from Finland named Ari Pulkkinen, who was writing songs and music when he was just 12 years old.
Classical Kids and RTE Junior with orchestral versions of game music. More blurring of the lines on Marty in the Morning on Lyric FM. As you know, his listeners' gags are usually of the dad variety, but it now turns out the kids are getting down with the dads.
Ellen Gavigan is 13, and she said, here's a rubbish joke. She says, we have a new recycling company. Been a great success.
Although the dad and mum jokes, the folks jokes, did get a run out this week.
He says, scientific research has discovered that your taste in music can be determined by your chromosomes. A leading scientist reported that XY equals male, XX equals female, and YYY equals Delilah.
Have you had enough?
Oh, here's the one for you from Tony. He says, I was enjoying my job as a crab impersonator. That's very good. Enjoying my job as a crab impersonator until they asked me to step aside.
From Marty in the Morning on Lyric FM. Marty Whelan also had one of the musical highlights of the week. This is Ophelia, the Great Storm, from classical guitarist Pat Coldrick. And Pat will be in concert with the RTE Concert Orchestra in May. Another musical highlight was from Country Time on Radio 1. Presenter Brian Lally remembers three musicians coming into the Pat Kenny Show studio many years ago.
Dig it out for you. It's Kieran Goss, Brendan Murphy, Kimmy Rhodes and Sharon Vaughan.
They had come in straight from a songwriting workshop and performed a brand new number there and then.
If you read this letter, dear, you'll know that I am gone. I'm waiting on the other side. My love lives on, and I am watching over you. You'll never be alone. The last thing I would do is leave you lonely.
Here I am, alone again.
from Country Time on Radio 1 on Saturday night. And then there are the audio moments that a week's listening throws up. These are moments where you're forced to reflect or to question your assumptions. For example, on Drive Time, Philip Watt of Cystic Fibrosis Ireland kept referring to a charity day called 65 Roses Day.
So it's the 12th of April and you can go out and buy a rose.
He explained that 65 roses was a phrase used with children.
And you know, 65 roses come from children. They first learn to say cystic fibrosis by saying 65 roses.
It's past three. Some more of your dedications in, Sharon.
Then on Aideen Gormley's Music and Musicals on Lyric FM, she read a sequence of requests from a woman whose children had been to the movies.
And The Lion King are very much looking forward to seeing them all.
For a drama group from Castlebar, from a woman who is baking for the opening night.
Break a leg tonight and tomorrow. I'm here baking for the interval.
And then this.
Aideen, can you please say a huge I love you to my girlfriend Marion from Sarah Shine. Safe journey home, sweetheart, she says.
The last musical highlight from the week, and here the playing is hard to comprehend. Flautist Fiona Kelly playing Vivaldi on Evelyn Grant's show on Lyric FM.
Murphy, good morning.
Good morning, Ryan. How are you?
Little did I know I'd be talking about pigeons on the programme this morning, but here we are.
Yes, well, I just listened to that.
This is the most suggested interview of the week to playback at rte.ie. On Tuesday, Ryan read out a report that a racing pigeon had been sold to a Chinese fancier for 1.25 million euro.
I was very big into pigeons up to 1980.
Then Pat Murphy got on to talk to Ryan about his history with pigeons.
I had big problems with my stomach.
Okay.
And I was diagnosed with irritable bowel syndrome.
Right.
I was told to take an hour for lunch and slow down a bit.
Yeah.
Now, I worked 7 days a week, long hours, lived on the premises, everything. To take an hour for lunch in those days, to me, was about 45 minutes wasted. A couple of weeks later, after coming out of hospital, I picked up a stray racing pigeon.
Yeah.
And I built myself a pigeon loft, and I started breeding and racing pigeons. And I, from having years of agony, I never, ever had a problem with my stomach when I started racing pigeons.
Right.
But although this started off as a chat about pigeons, Pat and Ryan then took the conversation off into Pat's personal life.
And Pat, life is good to you now, yeah?
Life is good. I have a partner now. Life is good. Went through a rough time after my wife died.
Yeah.
Really, went through a very
How did she die, do you mind me asking?
She died of cancer, diagnosed in March and died in August. Never sick in her life.
That was quick and cruel. Yeah.
Hit me pretty hard on it.
That's obviously going to be a tough time. But you've met somebody new, which is lovely.
I met a year and a half online.
On what site? People will be dying to know.
It was singles over 50. Maybe I should have gone for 60 over 70 because I'm 75 now. 77. She saw my photograph up on the website.
Yeah.
And I was sitting on my boat in Drogheda, and I had a beer in my hand and a dog on my lap. And I don't think it was me that she went for. I think it was the dog.
What a clever bit of advertising and marketing, Pat, of yourself. Put a dog in the picture, you're going to definitely get more interest.
Pat Murphy, in an interview that started out about pigeons, but unexpectedly ended up being about romance.
Oh, Lottie! And you're the best.
Now, in light of recent events, ITV...
Something similar, but a lot more serious, took place on a 2FM show that's usually about fun and laughs.
Give Love Island contestants guidance in three key areas to help them...
It began with a discussion about the TV show Love Island. This is a so-called reality TV show about a group of young people living in a villa in the sun and being videoed constantly. It has been hugely successful over the past few summers. This week, however, ITV announced that they would be providing extra support to contestants to help them deal with fame after they leave the Love Island villa. This follows the deaths of two contestants, the latest last week. On 2FM's Breakfast Republic, they started talking about the Love Island news, and one of the presenters, Jennifer Zamparelli, who had been a contestant on a reality TV show, talked about the impact it had had on her.
from being misquoted to paparazzi trying to get photographs up my skirt after the show.
God.
Ex-boyfriend selling stories. Nothing prepares you for the shit that comes after. And there was quotes in the paper that I never said.
But
nothing.
Also, I think what's interesting about that is because you're saying you came, you didn't come from any kind of a media background, your family have no experience with it either.
Well, that was the hardest thing. Because for my mom to read stories in the paper about my ex-boyfriend telling the nation about what we got up to in the bedroom, I may not have got up to in the bedroom. It's not nice and they're not prepared for it. Luckily for my family, my now husband, Lau, who I was with at the time, and his family being so sound and so supportive. I had such a good network when I came out of there that kept saying, look, we know what you're really like. We know the real you and we don't care. That got me through
it. So important.
It's so easy to have a breakdown. It's too hard to deal with. It's too hard to deal with on your own, especially when you don't know what to do with it. You don't know what to do with this fame and it doesn't last long. And if the phone doesn't ring, they're like, oh, did I do something wrong? So there's all of that going on. And I just have to say, be prepared if you are going to put yourself into that world. And if you do need to, I have to say the Samaritans are available 24/7 on 116 123.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM's Breakfast Republic. Two stories of tragedy featured widely this week. In southern Africa, a tropical cyclone hit Madagascar, Zimbabwe, Mozambique and Malawi. Over 400 people died, hundreds are missing, hundreds of thousands need help. The scale is hard to take in.
My father-in-law died when a house collapsed over him and another child that we are yet to find. We suspect the child is stuck under rocks somewhere and we are begging for assistance to locate him.
From the BBC World Service, as heard on RTE Radio 1 Extra, and on the News at 1 and Radio 1, Matthew Cochrane of the Red Cross told Anya Lawler about the destruction caused by the storm.
Entire communities have been washed away. There's where there used to be villages, there's now an inland sea that's as deep as 6 metres in some parts.
In some ways, Cyclone Idai, it seems to have resembled a massive, massive military strike.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that comparison before, but I think you're right. If you look at the pictures of Beira, you don't have to use much imagination to think of cities in Syria or Yemen. The city's been completely destroyed.
A military strike. That phrase not only illustrates the impact, but because climatologists say that the storm was made more severe by climate breakdown, that phrase also implies that the source of the attack came from places where global warming is being stoked. In the case of the African cyclone disaster, video and stills were arguably better at telling the story than audio. With the second tragedy, audio and text had more impact. That tragedy was the crush outside the disco in Cookstown, County Tyrone. Three teenagers died: Lauren Bullock, Morgan Barnard and Connor Curry. Ironically, in a week when we were being urged to be careful about news coming from social media sites, the report from Cookstown that best conveyed what went on appeared on the Facebook page of one of those caught up in the crush, Emer Tallon. Her words are spoken by an actor.
It started with pushing and shoving, but everyone was still laughing and having a good time. Then the literal crushing started. The people on the outside of this line were so determined to get in, they felt the need to not only push us against the wall, but push with all their strength. No matter how much we screamed and pushed back, there was no movement. Two of my friends fell to the ground. I tried to pull them up, but at that point, there was no room for them to even come back up. So I started screaming at the top of my lungs. My friends are on the ground, move back. My friends have fainted, move back. My friends can't breathe, move back. Nothing, not one bit of movement. I could still see people laughing with no idea what was going on. At this point, I thought my friends were going to die. I was standing up and I couldn't breathe, so I couldn't imagine how they felt. I was hysterically screaming for people to move, but it was only the people around me who knew the seriousness. With more and more pushing, I also fell. But the thing about me was that I wasn't on the ground. I was on top of someone, and this person was on top of someone else. As I looked down, I could see multiple bodies underneath me, and as I looked up, I could see multiple bodies on top of me. It was the most traumatic, frightening, and stressful moment of my life. I was looking about for my friends and trying to keep my head up. As dramatic as it sounds, I closed my eyes for a little and accepted what was going to happen. However, an elbow to my throat soon woke me up. People were scratching, biting, and grabbing anything they could to pull themselves up to breathe. I think that's what really shows the seriousness of it all. People were literally fighting for their lives. It got to a point where even when I had my eyes open, I couldn't see. It felt like this went on forever, but eventually I felt bodies being dragged over me and beside me. It wasn't the bouncers and it wasn't the police. It was the young people in the line who pulled me out. My leg was caught underneath someone and my hair was caught somewhere else. My jeans were pulled down around my thighs and my jersey above my head, but I was getting pulled out nonetheless. I lay on the ground and opened my eyes. I remember seeing some motionless legs, a few socks and shoes, and then I was pulled up and brought away. I rang my parents to explain what had happened and let them know I was okay. I then tried to find my friends. I ran about frantically. I saw a young boy lying motionless, trying to be resuscitated by the ambulance crew, and I saw his friends screech as they found out he wasn't going to make it. I don't think I will ever experience more relief in my life than when I saw one of my friends that had fallen. I was shocked she was alive. We all eventually found each other apart from my other friend that had fallen. We heard people had seen him, that he was roughed up, but he was okay. I needed to see him for myself, though. He then came running towards us, sobbing, and all we could do was hug him. These people aren't just people. They were young people, teenagers at 16, 17 years old. They were only children. It could have been anyone. Unfortunately, a friend of mine who I had seen in the line and chatted to minutes beforehand has died. Morgan and the two other angels, just like the rest of us, left their families last night for an enjoyable night out, but unlike the rest of us, they didn't make it home. My heart breaks for their poor families. There is no sugarcoating what happened last night.
The words of Emer Talon, as read by Rachel Breslin on Today with Sean O'Rourke on Tuesday. You may know that this programme, Playback, as well as being broadcast on Saturday mornings, is also podcast on Friday afternoons. And the same is the case for another RTE radio programme, Callan's Kicks, part of which came from Brussels this week.
Bienvenue. First of all, I'd like to point out that this is my good side, so please shoot from this angle. Thanks. Look, it's totes amazed to be abroad again this week, especially since I had a break in Chicago, rather than doing a continuous loop of Europe, having the same five or six meetings over and over with no conclusion, or last Brexit to nowhere, as I like to call it. Lol.
Speaking of Chicago, you said Conor McGregor didn't represent Ireland at the parade. What do you mean by that?
Well, look, we're all happy for Irish sports stars to represent us when they're winning, even total skanks. But McGregor has been phoning it in for ages now. I mean, the people who can best represent Ireland abroad are beloved icons, doing so at huge cost to the taxpayer for the good of you know, because it's hugely beneficial for next question.
Were you annoyed at being upstaged by McGregor on the day?
Upstaged? As if. I'm suave, gorge, woke and handsome. He's from Crumlin. Enough said.
Callan's Kicks from this week's Friday afternoon podcast. And of course, St. Patrick and things Irish were all over the radio this week. On Tuesday, 2FM's Louise McSharry had as a guest Sinead Ní Uachán from the Blanad Live programme on Radio na Gaeltachta, where the listeners are suggesting new translations for contemporary English. For example, a portmanteau word like hangry, a combination of hungry and angry.
So in Irish, farragach is to be angry, and ucrach is to be hungry. So when you mix the two of them together, you're fuckrach.
I like and that.
There's a certain amount of onomatopoeia involved as well.
Indeed.
It feels like it's my stomach saying, yeah. You know? What about a cocktail?
Oh, yeah. What would a cocktail?
Monglum.
Monglum.
Monglum. Yeah, it has a nice sound to it, doesn't it?
Does it?
Colm O'Regan on Radio 1 had Padraig Kevonig with a few more new Irish words.
I absolutely adore the Irish version of LOL, which is G-O-A, Gora Os Ard, because you could just say Goa, which is much nicer than LOL.
That's excellent. And this is my favourite now. I want to hear this one. Face palm.
Bus fuss.
Bus fuss.
Yeah, because shut the fuss. This is your puss, and your bus is the palm of your hand, so bus fuss.
From Colm O'Regan wants a word on Radio 1 on Monday. The previous day, Irish listeners got a little St. Patrick's present from the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland, the BAI. Recently, they paid for the digitisation of thousands of old acetate disc recordings of programmes from the early decades of Radio Éireann. And on Sunday morning, John Bowman played a few of the digital copies for the first time.
Now, they do say that when St. Patrick was preaching the gospel in Ireland, one of his converts was a king's son called Fingar.
They were from two St. Patrick's Day programmes from 1950, one from Cornwall.
Kiltion Carno Adi Nerch, Kiltion I Werthan, and Jaithuil Ma, Gol Patrick.
And a programme with Seamus Ennis.
In days gone by, St. Patrick's Day was an important day in many ways. It was the start of the old spring season. Weather became finer and warmer. Every second day from my day out, said St. Bridget. Every day from my day out, said St. Patrick.
From St. Patrick's Day 1950, the full Bowman Sunday 8:30 show is available on the RTE radio player. By coincidence, later in the morning on Sunday Miscellany, Karen J. MacDonald wrote that her grandmother had a saying about the same two saints that Seamus Ennis had referred to.
St. Bridget is reported to have said that after her feast day, the days would lengthen by a cock step on the dung heap every second day. St. Patrick said, after my feast day, a cockerel's step every day. That's the patriarchy for you.
Later in that programme, Fionnuala Doyle O'Neill brought us images of the everyday, or in her case, the every night. She's an insomniac and passes the time at night by mopping the floors of her Cork home. And occasionally, she pauses in her work.
I open the back door and lean on the railings of the veranda. It is so quiet. There are few hints of life, except for a bird chirping apologetically, interrupting the stillness. The bottles in the nearby bottle bank slowly begin to assert themselves, becoming noisier as the night breaks into early morning. I empty the muddy water from my bucket onto the crystal lawn, enjoying the swish of the water as it's slowly absorbed into the moistening earth.
From Sunday Miscellany. Another scene, and this time from the Book on One and Radio One. It's The Cruelty Men, written by Emer Martin, and the narrator is at a social function.
I looked at him closely. He was tall and had nice blue eyes and dark hair. He smiled easily and he was listening to me. Call me baby, I said. That's what everyone who knows me properly calls me. I'd like to know you properly, baby. He said it in such a deep voice, I burst out laughing. Would you now? And everyone who was at the table overheard the last bit, and we were all laughing until he turned bright red. But he stood his ground and pushed his hand back through his black hair. I liked the way he didn't have a head full of grease like half the Egypts there. When he went to the toilet, I wrote him a poem on the back of the menu. He folded it up and pocketed it. I'll read this later, he said, when I'm not full of whiskey and there's quiet. It was the first and last poem I ever wrote in my life, but Paddy would keep it forever between the pages of a book.
From the Book on One and Radio One, The Cruelty Men by Emer Martin, read by Breach Ninyachtin. And to the last of those clips I mentioned that started off one place and joyfully headed off somewhere else.
David, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are we keeping?
Good, thanks. What's the sign you put in the window of your hairdressing salon?
No pajamas allowed.
During the week, and Lifeline listeners were exercised about people, mostly young working class women, going out of the house in their pajamas.
I have seen them in Connolly Station having their cup of tea. You know, I'd be embarrassed if people got off the train from different countries and saw them.
And what, you think they might think it's our national costume or something? If they,
yeah.
Rosemary got on to say that her mother was not working class and quite happily went out in her pyjamas. Then she went on to talk about her mother's foibles.
My mother would wear whatever she wanted, whenever she wanted. She would wear her pyjamas into the arts club with her fur coat over it and stay there for 3 days if she had an argument with my dad. And she'd be very proud. To do that. And she'd tell him, I'm going to London to see the Queen. And she'd get a taxi.
Your mother would storm out of the house in her pyjamas.
No, she wouldn't storm. She would never storm. Oh, okay. My goodness, no, my mother. My mother didn't storm. She was very dramatic. She was a great drama queen. And she'd say, I'm going to London to see the Queen. And she'd call a taxi. If Dad even said boo to her, like. And she'd put on her coat, her fur coat,
yeah,
and her high heel shoes, and her silk pyjamas and call a taxi and go to the arts club and say, I'll see you whenever I'll see you. And she'd go off for 3 days and come back and say, no, where do you stand?
And what would your father, what would your father have to do to get her back?
He'd be trying to make jokes to make her laugh and everything, you know. But this was when they were retired and they were having a bit of crack. And,
okay.
But you know, she was incredible, yeah. She was quite a lady and she was her own person, you know.
And was she buried in her pyjamas?
No. Oh, God, that would have been good, actually, you know. No, she was buried in a beautiful suit.
From Liveline. And two more radio moments to end. One was a clip from The Late Late Show, played on Today with Sean O'Rourke. It was part of an interview with Laura Brennan, who died this week. She had cervical cancer as a result of the HPV virus. She was given the terminal diagnosis at 24, and then she contacted the health authorities to offer to campaign in favour of the HPV vaccine. On The Late Late Show, she explained why the prospect of being ill and cared for made her feel so strongly.
And I know my parents will take good care of me, but they'll come up and they'll ask me, am I okay? And I'll be in pain, but I know I'll tell them, I'm grand, or I'll crack a joke and they'll give me a smile back. But in their eyes, I'll see pain. Pain because their daughter is deteriorating in front of them. Pain because I'm in pain and there's nothing they can do about it. And that is why I got behind the campaign, because I don't want any mother, father, sister, brother, friends or family to lose someone from such a horrible illness, which is cervical cancer, which, thanks to the screening programme and the HPV vaccine, is now preventable practically.
Laura Brennan from Ennis, who died this week, aged 26. And then to another Ennis woman, and back to where we began the programme, with one of our national sports teams. On Thursday, on Morning Ireland, Des Cahill had this from the Irish golf team at the Special Olympics in Abu Dhabi.
Mairead Moroney, who'll be 70 in 2 months' time, the oldest participant in Special Olympics, and she mark that with a medal.
I'd like her to be Irish and to be wearing the green vest to Lubbery. It gave me a great privilege to wear the green vest because I'm an Irish lady.
Mairead Moroney from RTE News coverage of the Special Olympics in Abu Dhabi. And that's it for this week. Back again next weekend with the Playback podcast at 4:30 on Friday afternoon and the broadcast on Saturday morning on Radio 1 at 9:10. In the meantime, if you hear anything good on RTE radio and audio you think we should share, let us know by email to playback@rte.ie. Slán.